I was about 11 years old when my parents divorced. They had absolutely hated each other. They never seemed to stop with the fighting, the arguing, the shouting, and the person who had affected the most was me. My mom managed to win custody over me based on my dad's drinking issues, but we were originally quite poor. So, with the loss of half the household income, we should have been in a state of pure poverty. But according to my mom at the time, our luck had turned around. Days after the last papers went through in the final stages of the divorce, my mom met a man called Harry. Harry was incredibly wealthy. I even managed to find out about their relationship after I saw my mom come home each night wearing a new set of expensive jewelry. And every time I would question her on how she got the money, she would always answer with a shallow grin, then told me to go to bed. Eventually, I was able to meet Harry. We were moving into his house, after all. He was a tall man, about 6 feet in height, and radiated confidence and wealth alike. His hair was slicked back, and he was always well-dressed. To me, it felt like he was covering for something. His house was a colossal structure, containing several master bedrooms, and was ornately decorated with marble pillars. Though I was always one to notice the cracks. I would point them out, too, only to receive a deathly stare from my mom, followed by an eerie chuckle from Harry. In just a couple of nights, I started growing in my urge to discover who this man really was. Especially as one thing he refused to say continued to haunt me, causing me countless restless nights. I needed to know. The question I repeatedly posed to him was, "Where does all your money come from, Harry?" To which he would grow a dark glance in appearance, and my mom would retort with, "Don't be rude, John. It's inconsiderate to ask people about money." I knew my manners, but I also knew when someone was lying. He would always answer with the same dark glance and ignore it. What was he hiding? I began to explore the house, walking round the gleaming corridors at night, attempting to discover the detestable underbelly of this glamorous abode. Yet I could never find anything. That was the case, at least until one day. Whilst clampering past an old painting left on the side of the wall in the corridor, I noticed my steps seemed to echo only when in the area adjacent to the painting. I paced backwards and forward past it, testing if my theory was true, until I decided to take a look behind the painting, which bore an odd resemblance to Harry, and gave an even more extreme facade of true wealth. Lifting the painting up ever so slightly, I noticed a beam of light shining through a rather large gap in the wall. Realizing that suddenly I had found something. "What do you think you're doing, Jonathan?" A foul voice echoed from behind me as I jumped out of my skin, swerving my head round to see who called for my name. It was one of Harry's butlers. Or rather, one of his slaves. The butler's face looked wrinkled and bruised in areas, and there came a lifeless aura about his eyes as I spoke to him. Nothing. I saw this painting here and thought I could try lifting it back onto the wall. He nodded, and he grabbed the other end, and in one swift action, we lifted it back onto the wall. I thanked him and pretended to move away, only to scuttle back moments later as I heard his steps fade off into the corridor down the other end. I darted back over to the crack, peered through. I felt my body seize up in fright. Through the gap, I was bearing witness to several women, all locked in cages, with camera equipment lodged all over, with their lenses set on the captives. There were countless wounds, scars, bruises that were scattered over their bodies. Their mouths were taped shut, hence why I never heard them before this. The rest of the room was lined with clubs, bats, whips, chains, and a whole assortment of different weaponry, all capable of delivering torture to anyone they could reach. I fell back in shock, and the walls around me felt like they were warping into smiles and grins alike. I was thrown into a state of pure terror, and so I reacted just as any other 11-year-old would have, and sprinted back to my room with tears flooding my eyes. I laid in bed that night, thinking only of the poor, tortured souls that were hidden behind the marble walls and fake smiles. Then, I remembered my mom. I leapt out of bed and threw myself into a full sprint down the corridor to find my mom's room. We needed to get out of there quick before she became a prisoner, too. I slowed down as I approached the room, just so Harry wouldn't hear me if he was in there with her. Unfortunately, as I snuck closer towards the bed frame, standing over my mom's empty bed stood Harry, with a bloodied hatchet clutched into his arms. My mind fell into a trance. Did he hit my mom? Did he put her in the cave as well? Was she alive? I could feel nothing aside from all these crazy thoughts running across my mind. It truly pierced me with such a morbid reality that I simply couldn't cope. And as I lost feeling in my legs and hit the floor, I too had just doomed myself to an eternal silencing of my life. Hearing the thud of my back hitting the ground, Harry swiveled round, bearing a demonic smile as he slowly crept up towards me, bearing the hatchet in his arms, raising it high, ready to strike. You know, John, I always wanted a son. The hatchet he was gripping came down on my legs, severing them from my torso. I screamed, but only internally. My body had completely shut down. And although I could feel my veins being lacerated by the metal axe, I could make no attempt to flee. And endurance seemed to be all I had left in this life. He took me to his study. He injected some narcotic into my bloodstream, filling it with a sense of drowsiness. And ever since that day, I've been sewn to this wretched wheelchair. Then, been forced to tell the story repeatedly into one of his little cameras that he then sells to vermin like you on the dark web. He'll be here soon. If you're reading, watching, or listening, please stop buying this. Let him end my suffering. I can't go on any longer. Please, help! The death of my husband was unexpected. He was never sick. He didn't have a weak body or heart. He was healthy, and his family had a track record of living up to 90 years. It made no sense that he was hit by a truck in the middle of the road. But what could I do? His corpse was already buried. It was hard to remain in the house we shared. Never mind that the rent was too much of a burden for only me to bear. The memories that surrounded me choked me. And I knew I couldn't stay there anymore. I searched for someplace else. And soon I found a suitable house. It was small, and it matched my budget. The only thing that didn't feel good enough to write home about was the weird news I heard on the day I moved in. I was exhausted from packing and unpacking. After the long day, I decided to breathe some fresh air in the garden behind the house. Not exactly behind the house. The garden belonged to the owner of the house behind the new house I rented, and it was a lovely sight to behold. I got out of my house and pushed the back gate into the garden of my neighbor. If there was a functioning back gate, it meant that I was welcome. At least, I wanted to believe that. It was impossible not to be mesmerized by the roses that greeted me as I entered. The beautiful string of colors and flowers delighted my eyes. I was dancing through the garden without even knowing it. It felt like heaven, until a deep voice called me to order as I neared a darker and choked up part of the garden, drawn by a strange smell. "You wouldn't want to go to that part yet," he said. I looked over my shoulder and glanced in the direction of the pretty voice. It reminded me of what novel writers deceived as husky. His muscles smiled at me through the sleeves of his shirt. His face was curved into a tiny smile. I was quiet and almost forgot all about my dead husband, just staring at my handsome neighbor in his brown eyes. I almost understood why women fell at the feet of men. He seemed to have been made right out of a romance novel into reality. He shook his head before my brain did a reset, and I introduced myself. He didn't seem so glad to see me, or maybe it was because of the side of the garden I was headed to. I extended my hand for a shake, but he withheld his. "You must be the new person." Something about the way he said it was cheesy, but his handsome face made me forgive him so fast. That didn't hold up for long. You must have heard the myth about the apartment you rented. What myth? I would have asked, but he continued so rudely I wasn't interested anymore. He rambled on about how the last four tenants who had occupied the house in the past 6 months went missing without any trace. Truthfully, the agent who told me about the house communicated something like that, but I couldn't be less interested. I didn't care. I wanted out, and the house was a nice deal. I didn't even mind if I was missing after a while, too. Anything that would make me forget that I had a life without George in it was fine for me. When I got tired of the rambling, handsome man, I said goodnight and took the back gate back into my own house. I promised myself never to go there again, no matter how beautiful it smelled. I couldn't hold the resolve for long. I was back there the next day, and the day after, and the day after. I even started to tend a small part of the garden, hoping that grumpy Mr. Handsome, who refused to share even his name, would not find out that I was stealing a part of his garden. I still found it weird that a man dedicated so much time to the pruning and development of such a beautiful garden. I knew, because I watched him through the window in my kitchen when he attended to it, first thing in the morning and last thing in the evening. I stole into the garden at midday or midnight when I was sure he would never be there. I couldn't have known he saw me or watched until another day when I was tempted to check the darker part of the garden again. It was only my second month in my new house. I stole into the garden at midnight, as usual, hoping to clear my head and escape from the nightmares that disturbed my sleep. But the longer I stayed in my usual spot, the more my nose was disturbed by a foul smell from the choked-up part of the garden. I tiptoed and was at the entrance in little time. I wondered if that was where he kept the fertilizers and manure he used for the garden, and was soon met by several ancient boxes. Goosebumps crawled over my skin. I felt like a pirate who discovered a treasure. The foul smell in the garden hit stronger as I moved closer to the boxes. It smelled like something rotten. I lifted one of them, and the sight that hit my eyes drained every iota of blood left in me. I gripped one of the trees to garner the strength to stand. I crawled out of the garden and raced back to the gate that led to my house. Thank goodness I brought my phone with me. I dialed the number in a rush. I didn't hear anything as I stepped in front of the gate and tried to open it. It was locked. I didn't lock the gate. I couldn't even if I wanted to. I banged it, wondering how it locked itself. I didn't need to wonder much longer, as a voice behind me made me shiver. "I see you have discovered my lair," he uttered. And I wondered how I ever thought that his voice was sexy the first time. "Welcome, Ms. Helen. It's your time to join them." I screamed and banged harder at the gate, shouting for help. It was useless. Everyone disappeared. I remembered his narration the next day, and I shook as his footsteps drew closer to me where I stood behind the gate. I pleaded that he should let me go. I said I wouldn't tell anyone. But he shook his head. The blade in his hand shone. And the only thing that saved me that night was the sound of sirens and the entrance of detectives. He raced away, sensing that he wouldn't be able to finish up before he was caught. The officers found the garden and found me shivering and shaking. I led them to the lair while they explained that they heard my plea for help from the emergency call I made. I'd forgotten about the call. They traced the phone number and found my location. I couldn't help but be thankful. Grumpy Mr. Handsome was never caught. The detectives tried to identify the bodies that were found in those boxes in the garden, and I traveled to another town. I moved in with my mother and hoped to forget my husband there. I straightened my tie and checked myself out in the mirror. It was prom night, the biggest night of high school. I gave my reflection a big grin. My mom came into my room and put a hand over her chest. You look so handsome. I smiled at her. She threw something at me, and I caught it by reflex. It was the key to the car. She told me I deserved it, and I wrapped her in a big hug. She laughed and told me to hurry so I wouldn't be late to my prom night. I couldn't believe she gave me her car to drive. It was her prized possession. Since she and Dad divorced, she felt a need to show people that just because she wasn't married didn't mean she couldn't be better off. So she slaved away and got herself a nice car. The same car that was thrumming under my command. I got to school and whistled at the view. There were decorations everywhere. I never knew my high school could be this beautiful. I went to the lunch area, since that was the venue for the prom. I saw all my friends with their dates and felt slightly sorry for myself. The one girl I liked probably didn't know I existed. I was determined to enjoy myself no matter what. I drank punch and mingled with the rest of my classmates. We danced and laughed. It was so much fun. A certain brunette caught my eyes, and my gaze followed her. She was being dragged out by the captain of the football team. I frowned, wondering what was going on. I followed them out and met them in the hallway. Her name was Lily, and I've had a huge crush on her for as long as I could remember. He was gripping her by her elbow, demanding, "Bitch! Hey, you can't talk to her like that!" He turned to me and scowled. I saw that his hand was still holding Lily's elbow and she was trying to free herself. I pushed him away from her. I had muscle on him, and I knew I could take him down if we got into a fight. Apparently, he realized it too because he walked away, making sure he bumped into my shoulder. I shook my head and I turned to Lily. I asked her if she was fine, and she nodded vigorously. I saw that she was shivering and removed my jacket for her. She muttered a thanks, and I shrugged it off. "You know, we don't have to go back there if you don't want to," I said, stuffing my hands into my pockets. Although a part of me hated the fact that she almost got hurt, a larger part of me was excited I was with her like this. She looked at me, and I felt my insides melt. I told her we could just take a walk, and she agreed to it. On our walk, I talked about how she shouldn't ever feel like tonight was her fault. I told her some guys just weren't good people, and their actions weren't a reflection of who she was. She blushed when I told her she was beautiful, and I took it as a green light to proceed further. The route we were taking would lead us to the car park. When we got there, I told her that we could just sit in my car because of her heels. She looked relieved and told me she needed to rest her feet. We got to my car, and I opened the door for her, feeling so good. Lily was in my car. Miracles were real. We talked about her, and I got to know her passion for dancing. She got so passionate about it, and told me of her dreams to have her own dance studio when she could. The conversation was going so well that I felt like pinching myself to make sure that it wasn't a dream. I didn't know who went in first, but we'd been leaning towards each other since the conversation started. Our lips met, and we kissed softly. It was beautiful. She was beautiful. She suggested that we should go for a drive, and I nodded. I would have done anything she asked in that moment. I started driving slowly, turning over once in a while during our conversation to see her face or see her laugh. I reached an intersection and turned to hear what she was saying. "Miles, watch out!" There was a pickup truck approaching us with speed. I swerved, but it was too late. The truck crashed into her side, and everything seemed to slow down. The car somersaulted. There was something digging painfully into my right leg, but I didn't mind that. I was screaming at Lily to wake up, even though I knew there was no way she could. Her neck was sliced open, and blood was pouring out. I couldn't breathe well, and dark spots appeared in front of me. Lily's face was the last thing I saw before I went unconscious. I woke up in the hospital, and my right leg felt weird. I opened my eyes slowly, and it took a while for them to adjust to the bright light. My mom rushed to my side, sobbing in relief. She ran out to call the doctor. I swallowed dryly. My throat was so parched. What was that strange tingle in my leg? The doctor came in, leading my mom. He came to me and checked the monitors attached to my body. "Where's Lily?" I asked him. The doctor looked at me sadly. "She's gone." A sob tore out of me, and I loathed myself. It was all my fault. If only I had stayed at the school. If only I didn't ask her to follow me. If
only I was more careful. If only I didn't try to get her away from that jerk. She'd still be alive right now.
You've been out for a week, and we had to amputate your leg.
I blinked at the doctor.
Did he just say my leg was amputated?
I looked down at myself to see a stump where my lower leg was supposed to be. I glanced at my mom, and she started crying again. I couldn't even cry for myself. What I suffered paled in comparison to what happened to her. I lost a leg, while Lily lost her life. I guessed it was only fair. I knew I'd still be able to walk again, but Lily would never be able to live again, and it was all my fault. They explained to me that the driver of the truck had fallen asleep when he was driving. That's why he crashed into us. Prom night for most people was memorable because of good things. I'd never forget my prom night, because it was the worst day of my life. It was the reason I wore metal on my leg, and the reason guilt wrecked me.